Well, as we know, Donald Sterling recently revealed that he has prostate cancer, but right now he's suffering from a more insidious disease, and that's foot and mouth disease. He just can't seem to say the right thing lately. And, of course, in his recent interview with Anderson Cooper, he had some more inflammatory statements. But I think what you're driving at is more locally is with LeBron James, who has been squarely against Donald Sterling's comments and has come out on record saying that he doesn't want Donald Sterling to own the Clippers anymore. And it has been reported that he has even gone as far as saying that if Donald Sterling remains the owner of the Clippers at the start of next season, that he would lead a strike. Now, there have been some reports since that LeBron may back away from those statements a bit, but it's clear that he has had a strong reaction to Mr. Sterling's comments, and I find it very fascinating if indeed he stands by them, that it's very rare that an active player in a sport would take such a strong political stance.
How many players do you think LeBron James would be able to get on his side if he were to lead a strike, if things went that far?
I think that he would probably be able to marshal the troops behind him. Certainly a number of the superstars, maybe even similar to the situation in Miami where they had the three-headed monster of LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They came together to play basketball. I think they might come together to strike and to make a point for the NBA.
Do you think that Sterling is going to sell his team, or do you think he's going to stick to his guns and say, look, I might have said those terrible things, but I've apologized and let's move on. I shouldn't have to sell my team.
Well, judging by the recent interview, Mr. Sterling may not be living in the world that the rest of us are living in, and he is a very litigious fellow anyway, so he might stick to his guns, drag this thing out in court, and that's what I kind of expect.
Let's talk a little bit about Brown versus Board of Education. We've got an anniversary coming up this weekend, a pretty significant event in the history of the United States and the history of education here and of course, of civil rights. What do you take away from this anniversary coming up, and what do you think some of the lessons are that are still to be learned here?
The interesting thing about this 60th anniversary is that it's kind of a retrograde milestone if you look at it. Around the country, there are many schools in many areas that are resegregating again. For instance, there was a report put out by UCLA that noted that New York schools were perhaps the most segregated schools in the United States. But it's troubling here, too, in Florida, in that we're experiencing this in public schools, but we're also experiencing it through the charter school phenomena. The Orlando Sentinel several years ago did an analysis and found that a number of Florida's charter schools were highly segregated. And with Brown versus Board, you know, we certainly wanted to have school that was on equal, education that was on equal footing. But in desegregating schools, what that also did was there was a social dynamic to that. Students were able to interact with students from another race, from another ethnicity, which is what the real world is all about. And what better place to have that type of interaction and to make your mistakes early and to learn from them than in school.
What's the answer to this problem, do you think?
Wow, that's the million-dollar question that we thought we answered back in 1954. So if I were to give a solution today, it's that we just need to be more vigilant, that we have to take a look and keep looking at our schools. Orange County several years ago came out from under its desegregation order, and that was seen as progress. But you can't close your eyes and say, well, we've won the war and let it go, because it's an insidious thing that resegregation settles back in.